Bro, so we were speaking about, like, I guess, giving people permission to speak into things when we speak into it ourselves. Because that's pretty big within, I think, within whānau, right? Like, a lot of things are quite tapu, for lack of a better term, or they don't want to talk about. It's kind of, I guess you want to call them family skeletons, e aha rānei. But all it takes is for one person to kind of break that ice, and then it can start a lot of good conversation. But to be honest, it takes a lot of, like, I don't know, like a lot of anger to come out first, right? Because it's kind of that shift, that's kind of the immediate stuff behind the door before we can actually get to the good stuff. Has that kind of been your experience with it all too?
Yeah, absolutely, brother. The first one is anger, shame, because you're a part of it in that sense. Like, you're whakapapa to that. It's happened in your whakapapa. So yeah, it's hard to become to address it. So it's easier to help other people's whānau. That's why,
Yeah, true.
I say to people, you can't heal from the same Pōrangi river you're born into, especially if they're the cause of it.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying like, if it's just as if they don't have the tools sometimes, whether they cause the mamai or not, they don't have the tools. They love you, but you go around the same circle over and over again, and nothing will change. They'll dress it up in different things, and that's not to say that they're useless or they're. It's just to say they weren't given the tools that's needed for this particular kaupapa.
So can you, I mean, this might be a bit of a hard question because it's obviously kind of watering down your mahi a little bit, but I'm wondering if you can give us kind of, I don't know, three, four, five, six, seven, something like that, just a few, I guess, tips or ways in a list form of sorts that can help people to get these sorts of kōrero starting within their whānau.
This is interesting, brother, because it depends what the dynamics are. So I'm going to give you an example. Say somebody rang me up and wants to address sexual molestation in the family. Adult, successful, all of, got everything. Wants to address sexual abuse in the family. He's one of the victims. And I said, what is your goal? To heal yourself? Or to cut somebody's head off. And oh, I'd like to heal myself. Okay. And what else? I want to heal the whole whānau. Well, I'll tell you right now, if you open this up in the whānau, you're going to get a massive wall come up against you. So I think people think if I open and talk openly from the heart, everyone's going to be open to receive this kōrero. And it's like,
Because
no,
that's the
bro.
thing, right? Like we can often think just because we're ready to talk about it doesn't mean others are ready to talk about it. Because I
That's
know
right.
that's probably by one of my big, I would say, downfalls as a person, because I'm so ready to talk about the hard stuff. I know it's going to hurt and I know it's going to upset me, but I'm ready for that. And I kind of fall into the trap of thinking that's normal for everyone.
I think it's beautiful. I don't think it's a trap. I think you should normalize that
Yeah,
whakaaro.
well, of course, bro. But then obviously, when you get into spaces with people who aren't ready for that, that's when, I've had similar situations to you where I've had cousins that have been threatened and, want to have a rumble or auntie, even aunties and uncles, who do you think you are talking about this? You don't even know. Like, or and then and I'm thinking, how did I not see that coming? Like, straight away, I'm just like, because I was so like, well, I'm ready to talk and I'm open and I'm nobody, like, I'm ready to do this. But then, yeah, it's obviously like, yeah, it's a lot harder than what I remember it is sometimes, because I forget just because I'm so open to it.
Yeah, I'm the same boat. And even if someone's not ready, I will still speak like this no matter where, to plant the seeds. So when that person is ready down the track, they go, oh, that's right. The bro did say this might come up. And so it's basically planting seeds for whānau and friends. Even when I'm doing the podcast, any interview I do, in the back of my mind, I think, I hope I'm dropping enough seeds of hope for the whānau listening. That's what I think this all the time, brother, because I'm not assuming I know their whakapapa. I just assume that somewhere someone's going to need some help. If not them personally, someone really close to them. But it's
Right,
harder with whānau.
you mentioned before, speaking of whānau, you started talking about your kids a little bit. How much did having children change the game for you in terms of how you wanted to approach all of these issues within whānau?
Look, even with my eldest, who's now just finished first year of uni in Auckland, even when she was young, bro, I was still swirling. So it didn't change because I didn't have the tools. I was writing a suicide note in July 27th to her. And I'm so grateful that she didn't get that letter and that her dad is alive. So it's like people feel that, you know, if they got kids, they're going to hold on. Well, I'm one of many who didn't want to hold on. And I'm the only one that I know who made it out of a circle of friends. And they had tamariki. So it's probably it's a very interesting gray area. It's you've got to make sure that you're getting the help so your tamariki don't have to go through the same shit you did. And as soon as you start healing yourself, you watch the change in your immediate whānau and your tamariki. You can't, I've had people go, I want to help my uncle, my aunt. And I said, about what you've just shared with me, very heavy intergenerational trauma. I said, don't put all your heart on top of that whakaaro because you're going to get disappointed. But you start healing yourself and putting in the mahi that you deserve, your partner's going to benefit, your tamariki's going to benefit, most of all, you will benefit. So it's difficult, bro. That's not as easy. You know, you start putting in the mahi. It's not that I go around talking about like, hey, man, I'm the man and I'm healing. It's like, bro, you just walk it and be it. People observe that. You speaking the pono shakes the foundations that they're pretending are stable. And I'm not out to headhunt anyone. As soon as, you know, when people go, I want to dress with the whānau, make sure it's for the right reasons, not to go chop a head off, but to make sure that everyone else is safe from here on in. And, that, you know, so as you tread into this heavy space, which whānau have covered up over generations, you're going into the dragon's den. And just be aware of that. They may have smiling faces now, but you address this certain topic, watch that face change and the whole way to a change in the room.
And that's the thing too, right? Like when you think about all of these, all of the traumas and stuff that you're going to unearth, sometimes a lot of them have been intentionally sort of covered up. So you got to be prepared to find out that or to meet some resistance too, eh?
Yes, absolutely. You got to be, don't assume that's going to be happy families as soon as you have one hui with the whānau. It's actually going to open up. It could divide you even more.
Mm.
But as long as you know what you're walking into, you'll take those steps a little bit more firmly. Still tentative, but still firmly. Like me just saying to my nanny, my two aunties and uncle going, well, before we can, as if I'm there, all of a sudden I had brave undies on for 5 minutes. Before we continue this kōrero, can you please acknowledge that we're from the same Pōrangi River? Just me saying that felt incredibly brave for myself. I've never said any words like that before in front of the uncles, my dad, my mum. I just, for that moment, I went, I'm going to say it because I'm facilitating spaces for different communities. As we discussed, it's extra hard when it's your own whānau.
And as you say, like as you started when I kind of asked this question, right, when you, the first thing you said was like, what is the goal? What is the point? And when you kind of have those moments when you're scared or you're unsure and you're afraid, you just go back to that why, right? And you can be like, okay, yep, this might be embarrassing. Yes, my nannies might be getting angry at me, but if my goal here is to help our family move past some tapu-tanga, let's call it, that might potentially be a barrier for our future generations, then that slap in the face or that auntie not talking to me for a week is going to be worth pulling down those barriers, eh?
100%, brother. And also, you're being the hero that your younger self needed. And so by even planting the seeds with the older generation, where that is tapu-tanga in action, even planting and being brave enough, they think about it. Because it slowly starts to infiltrate past those multiple security systems. It may make them angry and upset. But over time, they slowly, it's not everybody, some will go, you're right, nephew. We should have looked at that shit. I'm sorry that happened to you, fellas. And even just that simple kōrero was quite healing. You're sorry. I've never heard that from any of the adults. So it's just to be kind to yourself. Don't expect miraculous changes by being the most open in the whānau. You might get a slap, a punch in the face, ostracized. But know that you're also probably giving other people who don't have a voice permission to breathe in the whānau, who've been traumatized by the same thing you're talking about. You might be giving them permission just to breathe for that moment that you speak that puno into the light.
You've mentioned a couple of times now, bro, that you often reference your old self when you were going through the thick of the taniwha, let's call it. How often do you speak to that version of Rob, or how often do you think of him when you're doing all the mahi you do? Because it sounds like you use that as quite a big referencing point.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was calling him taniwha, and then my mate from Ngarati Pro sort of came to me, just gently corrected me as well. You know, taniwha are kaitiaki. Maybe the taniwha need to be reminded that they are kaitiaki. And I said, that's puno. That's very puno. But then we had a little side discussion. I said, well, from kōrero that I've had, there's over 200 variations from te pō to te āmarama of taniwha. Mm. So that's another one, a kōrero from another time. But yes. Yeah. But what it is like, when I first started doing shop, bro, one of my rituals was after we would go home, we'd have a kai and we'd have a debrief. But after I have a hot shower, and then I look in the mirror and I say to my taniwha, my kaitiaki that didn't know I needed a hug, was, we did it. I did good. And the voice that would come back was, so fucking what? Excuse my language. I'm swearing now. He said, so effing what? That's what I'm saying back to myself. And I said, too effing late. In the mirror, I'm standing in the mirror. I'm talking to myself. But also I'm talking to this entity, this wairua. You know, in te ao Pākehā, they'll call it a psychosis. And in te ao Māori, in te ao wairua, it's like, who's talking to you? Tūpuna or taniwha or not taniwha or something darker that needs to be addressed. So it's to differentiate who is communicating with you. And when people are doing a purification or doing an exorcism, or the Pākehā word exorcism, you know, that you hear, my Auntie Rose would say this, she would say, we would be attacking the entity, not the tangata. So we might be chanting, it looks like we're at the tangata, but it's at the thing that's wrapped around that tangata. So I always think everything to do with intergenerational trauma, there's your protective physical shell that you've built to get through it. And then there's this other thing that's wrapped around you to stop you talking. Stop you talking, listen to the light. Actually chokes you when you try to kōrero. It's happened to me in the beginning of my trying to speak. And I've heard other people reference that they feel like they want to say something, but they feel something's wrapped around their throat. And I think of that, and when I think of Te Ao Wairua, I think, okay, this brother, this kuia, whoever it is, needs a pūre, some purification to get some rongoā Māori. Not just Te Ao Pākehā, some rongoā Māori. Go to the moana, go get a takutaku, get blessed, clear this energy, which maybe you whakapapa to or jumped on top of you.
I'm wondering, and this is a little bit random, bro, and once again, it's one I don't know how to ask properly, but I'm wondering, do you think there's a way to kind of heal through the stuff without acknowledging Te Ao Wairua?
Yeah, of course, everyone does it all the time. If you can block out your emotions and compartmentalize them, you can compartmentalize your Wairua with that, because it's a human survival technique. All humans have done it in various ways to survive. So Dr. Gabor Mate, leading doctor in addictions and trauma, he says it's not, the trauma is not what's happened to you, it's what happens to you afterwards because of that event. So yes, you're in shock by the moment of trauma, but all the reverberations happen afterwards because all the shame, the guilt, the everything that gets piled upon it, that you are worthless, that you should know better, or it's your fault, especially if, say, you're the victim of an event. It's your fault, and the victim is made to feel worthless by whānau members or community.
Yeah, because as we were talking, obviously, we're talking a lot of wairuatanga, and I've met people who claim to have no spiritual beliefs, and, you know, they kind of just go about their day and everything's pragmatic, and I guess it is because it is. There's no sort of deeper thought or meaning behind it. And I wonder, how would those people cope in situations like this? Because it sounds like to me most people, are most mental health advocates or even professionals in the area, there seems to be some sort of, most of the time, as I say, in my own experience, there just seems to be some belief, some spiritual element, some sort of tikanga in place when it comes to dealing with these issues. I can't think of anyone I've met where they don't have any.
That's interesting, because a lot of companies now, well, quite a few, not a lot, but quite a few, are implementing Tā Masonry's Te Whare Tapawha and looking further than the usual. We're just doing a Māori tick box thing here now. Now we've done holistic healing, tick, next. It's investigating taha wairua. What is that connected to? And where, how far back does that go? If wairua is internal, how far back does the, you know, looking at that whare tapawha on a deep level, we've got those tools, and it's intrinsically, it's in our toto. It's in our blood, it's in our DNA, it's in our whakapapa. You know, the confusion of colonization to compartmentalize us just to be like them, that's confusing. When I say we're Māori born into two worlds, because one Western goes off science because that protects their, at the same time, it's weird how they use science, but they're very religious.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, but they can't grapple spirituality or wairuatanga. So there's some weird disconnect, but they speak the same in different kupu.
Yeah.
And if you miri-miri that with them, and that's the confusion of colonization, Christianity, for Te Ao Māori, pre and post-colonization. If you take all of that out, bro, it's in our toto. You can pretend you're a Pākehā, you can pretend you're non-spiritual, you can be brown all day, look in the mirror, call yourself whatever. But deep down, the more you fight it, the more it's persisting. And my, this is my whakaaro. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying this. A documented,
a proven science. Yeah,
that's right. But you, the more you fight something, the more it's coming to wrap around you and keep you stuck.
Yeah,
it keeps you stuck.
I definitely agree, bro. And I know. So going back to, I guess, to the beginning of our corridor, we actually had a catch up in March of last year, but the kind of whittle or the kind of the proposal that was made at the time, because we got so into our corridor, I didn't understand that you usually have the people who interview you share a little bit about their own mental health journey and stuff, just to, I guess, not as proof, but just to show that there's a connection there. And it's not just, you know, hey, corridor mō te corridor, not just talking for the sake of talking. And I didn't, like, at the time when you asked me, because you didn't ask me this until post-interview, you're like, oh, by the way, bro, I forgot to do this. And I was like, oh, gosh, man, I've been pretty blessed. Like I mentioned off air before, and my listeners will know already that I grew up as a state kid for a little while, but it was actually quite a positive experience. So, like, there was nothing crazy there. I've obviously had a lot of mental health stuff touch my family. I've had cousins take their own lives and all those sorts of corridor. But I was really, really stuck. And so now the reason why I'm bringing this up, because you just mentioned about how there's parts of us, I guess, that we suppress or that we hide. And then that kind of leads to, I guess, something building, or our wairua kind of not being able to be itself, which then affects everything else within our body. And I feel like I probably went through a bit of that over the last kind of year or so, or since last time we talked, which, you know, I kind of always reflect on that corridor, bro, and have a bit of a laugh, because I remember thinking, I'm sweet. Like, I don't know what he wants me to talk about. And it's almost as if Te Ao Marama went, okay then, bro. And then it was like, you think you're sweet, you think you're good, here's some stuff to deal with. And then it kind of, yeah, I guess a lot has happened. So a couple of things I've had going on, bro. So one of the big ones is that partway through last year, 2022, I actually ended up in hospital two or three times with panic attacks, which has blown my mind, because I am what I would call borderline the world's most cruisiest man. I've always been, in my own view, pretty relaxed and pretty chill. So to think that something had worked me up so much to a point that it had hospitalized me, not just once, but multiple times, that in itself was quite a bit to sit with. So I was not only sitting with the physical ailments of going through that, but then, and I'm sure you know this too, like, then you go and reflect on the incident, and you almost sit through it again. It's kind of, you're sitting through it in two different timelines. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yep. And so that has been pretty massive, bro. And I'm going to therapy and stuff now to kind of unearth what has potentially gone on there. And one of the things that's come up a lot is that when I was a kid, with being, I guess, a state kid and living in these different households, as a driver, I'd always said to myself, we cannot waste our time here on this planet, or I cannot waste my time here on this planet, because so many people have put so much love into me, I have to make something of myself. Otherwise, I'm a failure and a waste of their time. And it's always been a positive sort of driver, and it's got me to some massive places. But now that I'm older, and once again, this is just the theory and some of the things that are coming up during my therapy sessions. Now that I'm older, I'm a little bit burnt out from that whakaaro and from living my life constantly feeling indebted to people. And I know that the debt the perceived debt is mine alone. I've had kōrero with these families at great length. I've sat with them and they've assured me time and time again, bro, you do not owe us a thing. You know, we were doing what we were doing because we believed it to be the right thing, or because they were trying to be good Christians or aharana. Each whānau obviously has their own value systems and why they were doing things. But majority of them were just trying to be good people. But yeah, that's been something huge that I've been trying to work through, bro. And then as you talk about, you know, things like strangling our voice, and I know, especially in the last 2 years, because a lot of those families I stayed with, bro, were Pākehā families. And then I was a part of lobbying for a government change that happened recently with introducing Māori wards into local councils, which had to be passed through Parliament. Yeah. And so I was a part of that kaupapa and a part of that kōrero. And so having to, I guess, because I'd spent a lot of time in these Pākehā households, and then now I was coming out trying to advocate for something that was, you know, very pro-Māori, and some of those households didn't agree with. A lot of them did, and it didn't bother. But I felt like I was really torn because I couldn't say some of the things I really wanted to say in fear of offending some of those whānau. And then I also couldn't say other things I wanted to say in fear of offending my taha Māori. And it was this weird kind of culmination of those two things that eventually, I think, led to me getting this anxiety, bro. So when you talk about, I guess, you know, taniwha and things like that, or things that come in and kind of stop us from being myself, I can definitely resonate with that now more than I could when we had this kōrero last year.
Well, bro, yeah. Well, bro, just you talking that into the light and sharing that with me, bro, I really appreciate that. And because I know that's not easy, but also whoever's going to be tuning in, man, just your kōrero enough, that bravery, hopefully openness as tūtāne and tūtāne Māori can lighten the load for our other brothers and sisters. And bro, so I really appreciate that, brother. And yeah, man, it all resonates to me, everything you said. And it's like those anxiety attacks and say a nervous breakdown, a mental breakdown, is everything, your hinengaro, your wairua, it's telling you, and your tinana is telling you, you have to change, because you're holding on to something that's not working for you anymore.
I almost feel like, though, it's not really, well, for me anyway, it's not telling me to change, it's telling me to remember and go back to who I was.
Oh, beautiful.
You know what I mean? Like, it's kind of like, you have changed, you need to go back, bro. Like, you know, stop playing yourself sort of thing. That's what I've kind of taken, because, yeah, just like a lot of things, bro, that I used to do, and this was probably, this come from more of my whānau. So my brother and my father, probably two of the most pragmatic people that I know. They're spiritually, I guess, like open to it, but they're not, you know, they don't dabble in much themselves, I guess, but they are willing to talk about spiritual stuff. So when they said to me, like they kind of said to me, bro, like the last 2 years or so, we've noticed that you've kind of gotten away from that side of yourself and you've become quite pragmatic and logical. Like you used to be quite, I don't know, just real different with your whakaaro and open to different sorts of possibilities, but you're kind of fallen into like a yes, no, black or white sort of space. And that was huge, because that cracked me up, because those two are two of the people in my life, bro, who would always get hoha, the fact that I dabbled in the gray. They're very black and white. And then the fact that I would try and encourage them to see some gray, they used to get hoha at me. So to have them come and talk to me about that was pretty massive. And then when I now, like we've said, you know, when you reflect on your incident, when I reflect on my last year, I can fully see that now. But when you're in the trenches of the war that's going on, you don't see it, eh? You can't zoom out. You can't look down at it because you're there in the trenches on survival mode trying to get it done. So, yeah, it's been a trip, bro. That's always crack up when these things come up around, just my own journey and your whittle that you put out. I always have a little giggle to myself. I try not to blame you. Nah.
So thank you, bro. Also, I was having a massive vulnerability hangover. That's why that X definitely came up. Because I thought, oh, why didn't I have that conversation I usually have? Because of my vulnerability of sharing stuff with you that, once again, I thought I dealt with, but actually it was coming up making me feel vulnerable again.
Yeah.
So that was why the widow was trying to, you know, wasn't trying to throw you off. What I was trying to do, even though, you know, bro, we don't know each other, but we know each other.
Mm.
I was just trying to level the playing field out. So I'm not just, interviewer and exhibit A.
Yeah,
because I've had, if you talk about triggers, I've had multiple interviews where things have been misconstrued, or I've been used to be looked on. Here's exhibit A, and this is the, and it dehumanized, or I felt dehumanized.
Yeah.
So for me, I ask interviewers this question before we start the interview, usually, so it evens out the playing field before we get into it.
Mm-hmm.
So it stops from being the award-winning Qantas TV journalist to, I've got to be a human for a little moment.
And I can imagine too, eh, bro, like in the corridor, even naturally, if you didn't ask that question, you would probably bring up a lot for the person interviewing you, and they'd probably want to cut it off and go to the next question because it can get a bit tough. So, no, I love it, bro. I love it how, like I said, you forced me to kind of, at the time, I was like, hey. And then for me, I was just like, well, I'll just talk about my phone and then I'll put the episode up. But no, because I wanted to be, I guess, respectful to the widow, I really sat with it for a while and I didn't put anything out. And then eventually when stuff started to come up, I started cracking up. I was like, okay, well, we're going to have a story now.
Well, you know, just the fact that you're having a chuckle about it, bro, and because, you know, that shit is scary.
Mm.
When it's happening, you don't know what's going on.
Oh.
You're like, what's happening to me?
Yeah, or even when, I remember when I went up to hospital, bro, and I was talking to them about it, and they were like, look, we've checked your bloods, we've checked this, we've checked that, we've checked that, there's nothing wrong with your heart, you know, for a big fella, you're quite, you know, your blood pressure and everything, cholesterol, normal as a fact, it's pretty good considering, you know, you're a big dude. How's your stress? And I was like, hey, like, what's that got to do with anything, sort of? And then they were like, well, you know, X, Y, Z. I was like, hang on a minute. Are you telling me that this physical reaction that's led me to come into the hospital is something to do with what's going on up here? Like, there's nothing physical. And they were like, well, that's what we need to have a discussion about. And so, just that alone, bro, was like, whoa. Because once again, I had this narrative or the story of myself that I'm pretty happy-go-lucky, I'm easygoing, nothing's kind of too big. But obviously, my subconscious had been dealing with a lot of stuff that I didn't know what was going on.
Yeah, and just you sharing that, bro, which is beautifully articulated, and the way you described that, I had a very tough Māori brother, tough and successful. What a bloody double winner that one is. But he told me a long time ago when he was in that dark sort of space, and he never knew he had that in him because he's so mentally tough, physically tough, financially pretty robust.
Yeah.
And he said it was like, he unpacked it much later on when he got better. And he said, it's like there's a little lump that's hidden somewhere in yourself that you just ignore because there's only a little lump. And as something something happens in your life that starts to push that lump towards the surface.
Mm-hmm.
And he said he didn't realize. And this is what freaked him out because he's so mentally robust, so physically robust, financially robust. You know, he's got he's a triple threat there, brother. Sims, yeah. Dance, the next, but not there's that, but that's sort of that realm.
Yeah.
And I thought that's a very interesting and good analogy for me to use for others because it's like something that's only small that you don't think, oh, it's just this little lump.
Yeah.
And it comes close to the surface because something happened within the whānau unit, which made this come to the surface. And he's the last person, as well as his colleagues thought he was the last person that would ever go to a place like that some years ago.
And that's the thing, right? Like, we've spoken about this multiple times. It's funny, when you're in the war, you don't see stuff. And then now when you reflect on it, it's quite obvious. And you're kind of like, how did I not see that at the time?
Yeah.
Yes, one of the things that I remember seeing on your social media some time ago, and I wanted to kind of, I guess, get you to elaborate on this, Whakaaro, is that you said sometimes it's like brothers need permission from other brothers to heal. Can you elaborate on that, Whakaaro?
Yeah, but I've been going around the Motu and, you know, a little bit of Australasia just before the COVID, and there seems to be a similar thing. And I've realised I'm running into men's support groups when men, tāne, are helping tāne. And you see it, you see that they're waiting for permission to be vulnerable. Or do we have to be tough? Do we all have to be funny today? And they'll follow the lead. But when you get a group of tāne going, I'm going to be vulnerable and funny and talk the pono, it's sort of like they're looking at you, and it's kind of giving other tāne permission to be that too. So wahine are good at beautiful nurturers. So I've seen a lot of wahine nurture tāne. Tāne have told me their wife had nurtured them to this place of safety. But they also had to do their own mahi. They couldn't just lean on the wife and say, oh, this beautiful wahine tanga is healing me. It's supporting them. They had to do the mahi. So I've been seeing this, and I see it a lot, tāne and support groups being so puno that other tāne go, thank God, some blood. One of the brothers said it, spoke the real. I'm going to take this armor off just for a few minutes, just to speak the puno for free, and then I'm going to put it on just to let you know I'm still a tough mofo, and I'm not, you know, no shit. Just I'll be vulnerable, but just in case you forgot, I'm still a tough mofo. And that, hey, to boy, you be that, but know that sometimes you need to take that armor off to breathe, and that's what I mean. Tāne giving brothers permission to heal.
Choice, my bro. Before I let you rock and roll, bro, is there anything you want to mention? Is there, have you got any more shows coming up? Where can people find you online and stuff to hear more about your mahi? Share with us where they can get to you and what you've got going on.
Yeah, brother, I only go where the karanga comes from a community organisation. But you can find me on Shopbro Confessions of a Depressed Bullet on Facebook. If you message me, it goes straight to one of my emails, or you can go direct, or lowercase rob at toiturama.nz, or lowercase rob at toiturama.nz. And people find me. I've also got these tools that are now going to be, they're now printed by Mental Health Foundation, which is a big step for them, because I'm a rogue agent from the QBE sector, from the qualified experience sector. Yeah. So it's big for them to see that these tools that I share with the public anyway, they're embracing it for a short period of time and sending it out to the people. So I'll share that with you, because it's 8 po to help yourself if you're a suicidal ideation. And then there's another 8 po if you're the person helping a loved one. What do you do in this situation? And it's broken out, it's simplified.
Yeah, bro, definitely send me that. That's so important. I know a lot of fun
that can And bro, I just love that we can have this conversation again, because how funny that our last interview resonated deeply, because it gave me the fear from me hearing. I was like, oh man, I overshared. I should have asked them that question to clear the problem. And I was still scared for a while. And I, you know, so for you to give me a call, and even for it to still be in your mind and your waidua, I appreciate that, brother, because this helps me too. And we're hoping that by us sharing, bro, tāne sharing more of this kōrero into the light, other tāne feel permission to breathe.
Mean, bro. Last question. It's a question I ask everyone who comes on. There's someone out there right now, bro, who is feeling at the very bottom of their pit, the worst of the worst. What advice would you give or offer them right now in order to help them get out of that pool?
I would say, don't believe that negative tanifa voice, because that negative tanifa voice needs a hug and a cry and a safe place to process all that mama you're going through. And the other one is, you're not crazy, you're hurting, and you are worth more than you will ever realize. So please breathe, hold on, get the help that you deserve. From one suicide survivor to everybody else, please just give yourself the love that you're missing.